On page Resh Gimel, the last paragraph, he says something which needs a significant amount of thought to understand. He's trying to prove what we learned last time, that we look at light and darkness as two creations. It's not that darkness is just an absence of light, but that darkness is a creation unto itself. And here in the last paragraph on page Resh Gimel, he gives us what he's calling a raya from nature. Now, before I read it, we have to just understand the nature of light. Space is incredibly dark, despite the fact that there are stars that give a lot of light. What's the reason for that? That's because the nature of light is that you only see light if it bounces off of particles of matter. In other words, if you were to shine a flashlight in a vacuum, I don't mean a vacuum, I mean a vacuum that has no molecules of air, there would be no light. So the light is only that way. If you ever looked at the old pictures of astronauts going on a spacewalk, every single spacewalk is against the blackness of space. And you can wonder, they only do spacewalks at night? They never do a spacewalk by day? Remember the pictures of the astronauts? It was always in the background of darkness. So why do they stay up a whole night? Why do they sleep at night and do their spacewalks by day?
You see shadows.
What shadows? What was that answer? How does that answer the question?
No.
Okay. That's true, because they do spacewalks by day, but space has no light, because it only has light when it bounces off something. And that's the nature of light. Light, whether it's particles or waves, whatever light is, but it doesn't, you don't see light, there's no observable light unless it bounces off something.
One of the astronauts on the moon against the backdrop of the Earth. And the Earth was blue and clouds, but all around...
All space was black.
Black.
If it's not so light, you have a place that's not so light, and you're looking for a safer on the shelf, and you can't quite make it out, what you'll do, unless you're a Negro, if you put your hand under it, it'll light up the letters. And I know some experience. If you put your hand under it, it'll light up the letters. You can even try it now. You see, as you move your hand up the page, it gets lighter and lighter. Because the nature of light is only that it bounces off substance, and otherwise there is no light. Now let's see what he says about this. It requires a certain amount of thinking. When we think into this, hine eine habasar, the eyes of flesh, the human eyes, lo yakiru mitzias ha'or be'etzem. We don't recognize that light is something. Rak royin sheh bistalik ha'or shel tachayshech. It's just that when there is no light, we recognize the absence of light in the darkness. V'yaydim, therefore we know, yisrain ha'or, the benefit of light, rak min ha'chayshech. From the fact that when there's no light, we're missing it. V'lechein, and therefore we say, ma'at or doicha harbe min achayshech. A small amount of light pushes away much darkness, because the or is only visible, is only noticeable in contrast to darkness. Va'afim yichnes odam bi'isha in loyla l'cheder afel. Even someone goes in the darkness of night to a dark room, shein bechaloin, that has no window, harei bedlika chamish meyes neirais, if he puts on 500 candles, yoyir ka'or hayoyim cheshchas halayla, then the light will overtake the darkness. Imkei, yipolei. If so, we can wonder, maze va'al maze. Why is it so? K'mshemistaklim b'tzvois hashemayim. When we look at the heavens, gabi mashkefes, even with a telescope, hachicha zaka, as strong as it might be. And we see the multitudes of galaxies. And their light is greater than the sun, than our sun, which is a small star. Nevertheless, in the great expanse of the universe, we see only darkness. And the stars don't light up their surroundings. Now, he says, from this we can come to a conclusion, the darkness, I don't know how to translate this, it overwhelms the visible bria, and all of the many stars, here I don't follow exactly the logic. He's saying that is a proof that darkness is a metzias that overwhelms light. That light in and of itself does not spread. In other words, were it not for the fact that there's a reflection of light, so wherever there's light, there's light, and wherever there's darkness. Just as darkness doesn't overwhelm light, light would not overwhelm darkness if not for the ability to reflect. He's using this as an indication that light and darkness are two creations that exist side by side. And what he seems to be saying, despite the many stars, was it not for the property of light to reflect back, light and darkness would exist next to each other. Something that's light would be light, and it would not overwhelm the darkness, just like darkness doesn't overwhelm the light. That appears to be his observation.
How did this go with what it says in Barak and Afshin, where it says,
you have to speak louder. What does it say? Oita or Kasalma, Neitishmaya Kairia. He spreads the light like a garment.
Right.
Well, that's true. And if you observe, if you're in outer space watching Earth turn and become, and the lightness spread over the Earth, it would look like a garment.
Right.
As the Earth is turning, the lightness is spreading.
And
the okay, I'm not sure. The heaven itself is like Iria. Okay. I'm not certain how that works. I mean, the understanding of what light is something that scientists go back and forth on, the explanation of why light is. Because observable light is only when it reflects. Is it waves or particles? What's today's thinking?
They can determine how fast it goes.
What?
Speed. It travels, but that could determine that.
186,000 miles per second, if I recall correctly. About the same speed as a motorcyclist on Ocean Parkway. But we once calculated the 93 million miles from the sun to the earth at 186,000 miles per second means that we actually see the sun come up about 8.5 minutes or so. I don't know the exact number after. So when I was learning it, I was wondering if that's Bein Hashmashos. Bein Hashmashos is when the sun sets until the sun is observed setting. So we say in New York, we put the time at 8.5 minutes or 9 minutes. But it doesn't quite work out well. I remember we were speculating that was sort of the secret of Bein Hashmashos is the time in between. But anyway, be that as it may, it's okay. This is his observation. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu's gift of light to the world is after the creation of darkness. Sheyoytze kol ha'oirois al rikia shalcheshchas shalchashchus. That the light goes over the heaven of darkness. Oyse shalom shiskaimu orva chayshech b'toyim bizman echad. That light and darkness can exist side by side. Kol echad al v'koyme, each on its place. Sheina or deiches ha'chayshech ela v'yavdil alikim b'in or b'in ha'chayshech abdol v'leidichui. I think the idea that we mentioned in the past, that the light and darkness in Tehillim are always mentioned as a reference to good and evil, might be the same thing. that Hashem created Ra. It's not that Ra is just an absence of people who behave properly, but that it's a it's an actual creation that has certain power, whatever that power might be.
I was going to say, if you learn that Choshech is Ra, and Or is Tov, it says Doche Leitzonus Achas Meya Tochochus. So Leitzonus is like Ra, and the Tochochus is like good.
So why doesn't the Or take over the Choshech? Why does the Choshech seem to take over the Or?
That's the question.
It's, but something it says, Golal Or Mnei Choshech, and Mnei Or. There's a rotation. It's very hard. It's almost as if, in order for good to exist, it has to be reflected by somebody or something. In and of itself, it doesn't spread. It needs a certain amount of,
but if you look at the numbers,
of influence.
Like, Sonus Achas, Mnei Tochochos.
I always felt that the Chassidim who go Rabbeinu Tam's man, they say that it's day until the last vestige of light is on the horizon. It's typical Chassidus. Chassidus always sees everything as good. So they say, what do you mean it's dark? Look, there's still a little crack of light over there. It's not dark, it's light. You know, like it's their perception of what it is. Anyway, this is his indication. The unusual nature of light is, it's a unique creation, and, for whatever it is. Let's see, he goes into translating the beginning of the bracha, so let's see. Hameir la'aretz v'la'dora maleha, Kish Baruch Hu gives light to the land and to those who dwell on the land. Elu b'nei Adam v'chal b'alei chayim b'rachamim. Hashem does it with mercy, k'may shekfar bi'arnu. As we explained, he says in Baruch Merachim al Oretz, Shemahoysa Hashemesh Kroi V'yoysa La'oretz. Much has been made of this, that the sun is, the distance of the sun from the earth is such, that if the sun would be a bit closer to the earth, Afilamashu, even a bit closer, Lo'isa Tkum L'Shumberia, then existence, as we know, it couldn't exist, Shemahoysa Tevel Umlaya Nisrafis Mechaymai. It would be too hot. Ulehepach, hamaisa rechayka b'mashu, hayukol abriyos nikpois mekar, before it would be too cold. Kshbarchu me'alon uberachmim, ayidei shatola Hashemish b'mokem arayiv anach. And the sun is in the exact same, the right spot. Now this is something that I guess you have to take the scientist's word for it. It was further, it was closer. When there is an eclipse, and the fact is observed that the sun, The observed sun is 400 times as big as the moon. And the sun is 400 times as far away as the moon. The moon is 240,000 miles away, and the moon is 93 million miles away. So it's 400 times the distance. So 400 times the distance, and also 400 times the size, means that the way we perceive it, the moon exactly covers the sun at an eclipse. Despite the fact that one is bigger than the other. The idea that that could be coincidental, it's a little mind-boggling that the moon and the sun would have the same size, based on this mathematics. It's a little too much to believe that could be something that's coincidental. That somehow that's more noticeable to people than this idea would be hotter, it would be cold. Originally, they're both created equal. Okay, good. It's true. Vihine mayahergal etzleinu. We're accustomed to the fact shashem is zereach b'chol baiker v'shekeh b'chol erev ad shein ish sam alev shakol seder ateva ma'isi Hashem hu. We're used to the fact the sun comes up in the morning and sets in the night, and we're accustomed to it. We don't give much thought to the fact that nature is God's action. We assume that whatever happened today is going to happen tomorrow. Now, in brackets, he adds, Agav Orchin, not here, I want to mention, Shafilu HaChacham Copernicus, even Copernicus, who turned the world upside down, Shechokar Ateva Vehikir, who examined nature and came to the recognition, Sha'aretz Mistaveves Al Tzira, that the earth turns on its axis, V'yasiba L'shino Ya'arva Chayshach B'nyan V'layla, that is the reason for the change of night and day. V'kalmakim Shadibra Al Hilo Chayoymi Anir Al Ayin, still when he spoke the spoken word, Korat chilas rias nitzaisi ara shemesh v'saif ayayim v'shem zvichas ha-shemesh v'shkem shkiyas ha-chama. What he's saying is this, that when we find in Chazal the expression that the sun comes up and the moon and the sun goes down, as if the earth is stationary, and it's the sun that's moving. So they also say so. We don't believe in Copernicus's order of the world because we're saying that the sun travels around the moon. So I still remember someone telling this to Rebelsky. So Rebelsky said, "Yeah, the New York Times also doesn't believe in Copernicus." So what are you talking about? So well, it says in the New York Times, sunrise at this time and sunset at this time. Use the same expression. Sunrise and sunset. So obviously that's the expression that people have. And that's, it's interesting that in the generation that followed Copernicus, virtually all of the Chachmei Yisrael held that Copernicus was not, his theory was not a contradiction to anything in Chazal or in the Torah. At the same time that the church, fought it violently. The church, held that it was heresy. And, the one, I mean, Lahavdil, but the Rabbi Yonasan Eipshitz was the one who was involved in many controversies. And he was the one that held that Copernicus was wrong, that it was incorrect. What's interesting is that really the entire order of the world, of Copernicus' order of the world, is really based on mathematics, not on astronomy. Because Copernicus didn't come to his conclusion based on observation. If one is to calculate the old order, the way Plato and Socrates and Aristotle, the way they pictured the world is stationary, and there are balls moving around. To account for the double factor, there are two factors, that are taking place, constantly. One is the earth going around the sun, and that creates, the seasonal differences, and the other is the earth spinning on its axis at a changing, degree of axis. Now, in order to make a mathematical calculation for a stationary Earth and the sun going around, but the sun going around in sort of a looped fashion where it goes around at the same time it regresses, required the Rambam brings the Aristotle's model of the universe, requires sort of a loop around movement of the sun around the Earth. When you have the Earth going around the sun and turning on its axis, it doesn't require any strange calculations in order for it to work. It works very simply. And the theory of nature is that things work with mathematical precision in nature. You have to figure it out. But that there's a certain mathematical truth to everything in nature. And the simpler mathematical formula is the one which holds true. It's a basic idea. And in astronomy, that's where Copernicus came. Copernicus said, well, if you say the other way, you've got to make all kinds of calculations. And if you do it this way, then it makes sense. We see Venus and the movement of Venus in the sky. In order for Aristotle to make it work, Aristotle had to have a separate ball, which moves independently in the model of, Aristotle had a model of Earth at the center and a bunch of spheres around it that don't move in sync. In order for it to work. The simplest explanation. What's that called?
The law of parsimony.
Parsimony. Okay. The simplest explanation works. That's what it is. What?
That law is not
true.
It's not true in human, it's not true for human beings, but it's true for nature.
No, it's not true for nature either.
It's true in nature that the simplest physical explanation is usually correct. It's not necessarily the one that comes to mind first, but that which works mathematically is generally true. Okay.
Okay.
You may be right. I'm not a scientist, but basically science, it's incredible. I remember years ago I bought, when they had the dummy books, I bought Physics for Dummies. And I just found it fascinating how chapter after chapter deals with mathematical equations. It was a math book. It dealt with what a lever could pick up or all these things, and they're all mathematical equations. It's just, it's mind-boggling that that the whole universe works that way. And anyway, that was the sort of the simplicity of the complex world is what made it come. Okay, and anyway, at any rate, this is what he's writing in brackets here, this idea that things depend on how they're expressed. That doesn't mean the sun goes around the earth. I'm going to be away tomorrow, so Thursday, Mr. Shem.